Fala, meus brutões! Seja bem-vindo no outro lado, onde a gente vai viajando e explorando as trilhas vastas da sua mente. Com quê? Com duas pernas e uma grande vantagem de correr. Today we're coming to you in English once again because we got a marketing cowboy, marketing rock star, maybe one day legend, or we can say legend now too. We have JT Service. JT, how you doing, man?
I'm great, and even better now that I'm a marketing cowboy. I think that's what I've aspired to be. Yeah.
I think cowboy is good because what I want to get into today, it's like I heard you on Single Track, and I was on a run listening to this, and it's like in addition to endorphins on a run, listening to you talk about marketing and the way you talked about it, I was fired up, and I sent you a message on the RG.
Good.
I'm so sorry. I'm too excited right now, and I'm fired up right now. And why was I fired up? Because you are a cowboy, because this is the Wild West. And I'm down here in Brazil, and we look at the U.S., and a big problem we have here is people go, they got that shit all figured out. They're just following a recipe, you know, in the U.S. and in Europe. Right. And in here in Brazil, we don't know what we're doing. And I'm like, guys, it's not exactly like that. So I want to get into this today.
That's so funny.
JT, I want to
your enthusiasm. The enthusiasm. I'll take that any day of the week. Because if I'm dishing it out and you're feeling the same thing, let's go.
The frequencies are traveling to Brazil. I love it.
Exactly.
Sorry, let's start with Soul Focus, because this is your thing. Explain to me, what is Soul Focus and why are you the person to be at the front of this?
Good question. Okay, let's get after it. So Soul Focus, Soul Focus, that's me spelling out the name of our company, Soul Focus Sports. And the reason being is because I think a lot of people think it's Sole, because we're so into running and we're so into the foot strike of the heartbeat going around the world. So we are soul, as in soul and the heart, and of love for what we do. So Soul Focus Sports was born like 13 years ago to really just produce events for other people. It's so simple. It's like, I was a runner. I had an opportunity to get exposed to event production through the Silicon Valley Marathon around 2008 or so. And I was like, oh, I can do that. My friends and I, we could figure that out. We could do it better, potentially, with putting a little bit of soul into it, by putting a little bit of love into it. We're just going to be a badass event production company. And so we started that way, and we were working with charities, we were working with professional sports teams, producing their endurance events. Maybe it's a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon. And we did that for a couple of years. And then we took a next step up, and we're like, maybe we should own some of these ourselves, because not only do we want to like produce the event, but we want to put the marketing and the graphic design and the spirit behind that event as well. So that was kind of level up number two. And we started Run Local Events, which we've been, you know, previously called Represent Running, but now called Run Local Events. So that's when we owned all our own events. The third thing we added to it was like, oh, we've got all these sponsors, but they're just not getting like the value that they should be getting out of our events. They're sponsoring us, but they're falling short after the money. They're writing a check and they're walking away. That's so silly. Like, what a waste of money. What a waste of time. I don't want to do any of that. We have a very limited time in our life. Let's make it all great. So first, we're producing events for other people. Next, we're producing events that we own. Third, we start working with experienced marketing companies. So we're working with Under Armour, Hoka, Strava, Goo Energy, a lot of these companies you might have heard of down in Brazil. And we start leading their experience marketing and doing some consulting for their running brands. So that was kind of like the third impetus for Soul Focus, was let's start helping the brands align at these events. And since then, the only other thing we've added to it is we've started to like drip into other industries. So we got sometimes we get tired and bored of just a 5K, a half marathon, a full marathon, ultras, all those things. And we started working with GoPro on some of their kind of experiential sports. So we're putting them out there for the extreme sports. And then we started working with some local soccer clubs, some football clubs that, I mean, obviously in Brazil, that's number one out there. So we're working with the women's Bay FC. That's our professional soccer team to help build their fan base. So I think we're starting to like get into the general sports society beyond just these experience sports. And It's exciting, man. That's 13 years of my life. I've started by myself in my apartment in San Francisco, and now we've got 20, 25 employees, 100 contractors across the U.S., and we're absolutely rocking day in and day out. That's Soul Focus. Yep.
Talk to me about your interest in trail running, more the ultra side of things. Yeah. And where does that fit into these? You mentioned a lot of lifestyle sort of sports. So where do you put on the gamut of lifestyle sports? Where do you put trail running with that?
I love, I think Finn Melanson did a really good job talking about this in that single track podcast. So that's where I first started thinking about trail running and ultra running as this more lifestyle feel, this more like, how would you explain it? It's almost like that's what you do and that's who you are type of a sport. And they're not all like that, right? Like, there's basketball fans, but they're basketball fans. And then they go on with the rest of their life. And where I live in Santa Cruz, California, in Central California, lifestyle sports is everything. It's mountain biking. It's surfing, especially. I mean, it's Surf City USA, essentially. And that changes your whole life. You build your life around that sport. It's when you're going to get up. It's adjusting the schedule for your kids of who's taking care of who on the tides and on the wind and on the weather. And then it's also trail running these days. I think it's trail running and ultra running because it takes a lot of your life on this training, but it also where you live and what you have access to. So I think it's really interesting in that now trail running would be like maybe the most recent addition to this, to these lifestyle sports where people are crafting and building their lives around it. And that has a lot of implications. We can get into that.
This kind of become, I don't want to say cliche, but like within the margins of marketing, like people have been screaming about this for a little bit now. Trail running, yeah. It's a lifestyle sport. We need to treat this more like, we need to be looking at skateboarding and surfing, the way that they're marketing, the way they're talking to their audiences. Those should be our references instead of following NBA, instead of following NFL.
Right.
I'm interested too in like, but how is it different too? Then how treating it as a lifestyle sport, how is trail running different in your opinion than skateboarding and surfing? Obviously. Than the equipment.
Yeah, great point. I think it's easier to understand. I think surf has a really hard time connecting with middle America, with middle of Brazil, with middle of somewhere. You know, there's a lack of opportunity. Now that may change with wave pools and some things like that, but with run, everyone understands it. And everyone understands it from 0 to 80 years old. Like the timeline is extended. So now very few people skating beyond 25, 30 years old. Like there's some dedicated heads out there and I love it, but it has a much longer timeline. We got people at ultras at Golden Hour finishing Western States last weekend who are in their 60s. Like that's incredible. Now we've elongated and expanded the demographic. And so one, it's got a wider demographic, and two, it's got a wider understanding of what it could be. People understand running.
I love that.
More people to talk to, I think. More value.
And then quickly, one last thing on Soul Focus, but we'll probably touch back into it throughout the interview. Like you as recently had like a reintroducing it yourselves. Like what has been the evolution of Soul Focus over the 5 years? What has been the evolution of the company? What have been your major observations and maybe pivots?
I went through them at first, at least those were the outline, I think, of them, of what business we were getting into. I'd say our pivots now are at what level are we willing to take this? I'm trying to open up my entire team's eyes of like, there is no finish line here. The work we do is going to be expressed by the results. And that, what I mean by that is, why not make every single thing we do just exceptional? Like I think before in the last 5 years, it was like, let's get the job done. We're just learning. Let's get it to the finish line. Let's clean it up. Let's get everything back in the truck. Great. Well, now that you reach a level of comfort, not level of comfort, but like we've been around for 10 years. We're not going anywhere. I've got enough money to live. Why am I waking up every day? And why are you waking up every day to do this job that is very difficult? It's very difficult to put on runs, to put on trail runs, to put on ultra runs, to put on a brand event that may last. Gosh, my team just worked something like 72 hours straight at Western States, putting up Hoka banners, making the set look good, doing all these little tiny things. Why are you doing it? And it's because you have to like really believe in what you're doing. And so when I ask them to level up, it's because I'm asking them to do something very hard, but very important too. So when we're reintroducing ourselves as a company of purpose and our mission to make inspire movement in every community. So we're trying to make people move, whether it's at a charity event, a brand event. Are we taking money from, you know, a marketing budget and funneling it into firing people up to go out and walk, run, bike, surf, you know, utilizing GoPros to then inspire people to the next level. So I think it's a level up. It's a level up of why we do it. And that's mission-based marketing. And then two is to make it great. Like when we do it, it's this, I guess just like, let's just go big. I don't know how else to say it.
Love it. I think Western States is going to be coming up a lot in this conversation because it just happened over the weekend. It's fresh in our
minds. What an amazing freaking weekend.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, even more for you because you were there, you were part of it. I was running around falling. You weren't there personally.
I wasn't there personally. I had a team of 12, a team of 12 that were there from start to finish. There we had three events going on at the same time. I was back in the Bay Area. Yeah, but watching, you know, very closely, and I'm streaming it. And in a weird way, sorry to jump in on you, but I'm almost able to see it from a participant's eyes or from the viewer's eyes. So I'm actually texting my team, like, here's what I'm seeing. Can we tweak this? Can we tweak that? The set had a barricade in the back of it. And I was like, get that thing covered. Like, so I'm like looking, which was, if I was there, I wouldn't have been able to like see it from that.
We're busting our asses.
And they probably hate
who cares?
Me so
nobody's going to care about the tarp in the background. My God. And you're there, guys, come on, readjust that. Yeah.
We're leveling up. We just talked about this with Roger. We're taking it to the next level.
love it.
Okay. Sorry. But
taking Western States, which is, you know, it's the mecca right now for U.S. ultra trail. Let's take like the way marketing's happening there and looking at something like UTMB, we have more European, but now spreading worldwide.
This is great.
Like, what is our current landscape in the U.S. And what do you see in Europe? Where are the major differences and where are the similarities in current marketing for the sport?
Sure. I think level A is the acceptance of commercialism in Europe versus the fight, almost the tension against the commercialism in the US still. Where in France, Spain, these huge ultras, UTMB, obviously, Mont Blanc and some other championships, they're fine with the video screen scoreboard, a sponsor for every single category, VIP opportunities, suites, everything is I don't know. It's as close. It's probably some of it even more than the Tour de France. Like the way I feel of it, it's like it's on that level. And then you get to the US and we just have not accepted the idea that trail running either deserves it or should be classified as that or should be produced at that level.
Somebody's from outside of trail is going to be like, what are you guys smoking? Because you guys are saying that Europe is more commercialized than the US, which is just
in this space,
it's a bizarro world. But in the world of trail, I know exactly what you're saying. And like, what is that? Explain to people who are maybe not as in tune to the US culture of trail running. Like what are the cultural differences on the trails?
Well, as the marketing cowboy, I can tell you that the cowboy theme runs deep in American trail runners, which is they want that like freedom of commercial interests. It's a laid back sport. It has all these connections to surfing that I see. I mean, we're deep in surf. I'm a passionate surfer where you don't know if corporate interests should be involved in the surf world at all, let alone at the level that the European trail community has taken it. So it's this, I said the word tension earlier, but I think there's something about the number of participants in Europe is way higher at some of the major trail events. So let's just start with it at interest. Once you're able to show that as number of participants, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 people, I think it's some of these major trail festivals that happen on the weekend, you're going to get a higher commercial interest from sponsors. Once the money's there and once the money's being offered, it's so much easier to take it. So they've been doing this for 20 years. And as a capitalist, as a businessman myself, it's hard to turn down that check. You're thinking about your families. You're thinking about the runners. What other opportunities could we do? Can I have a bigger staff? Can I pay my staff more? Can I just do more with this event? So I think the opportunity was there. They took it. They ran with it. The U.S. trail world, more notably known for smaller trail runs. We're going to have 1,000 people max. We're going to have 500 at most of them. It's a much harder sell to a commercial sponsor to say, this is worth the value. Without a live stream like Western States has, that Hard Rock has, that anything that Jamil's doing over at Aravipa, without those type of numbers to show them, it's going to be much harder to get that sponsor on at that level and want a certain number of commercial interests. So I think there, one challenge is the interest was higher earlier in Europe. Two would be in the US, it's lower. And then we've almost taken the idea that it should be, and we've almost like gotten used to that tradition of like, it's grassroots, it's grungy. If there's a sponsor, just put it out there, put a bunch of goos on a table, and it's good enough. Same with that trail running community. If you try too hard, are you kind of missing the point of trail running, which should be this more individualistic, non-sponsorable activity? Like, you can't own me. So there's this weird American DNA mixed into trail running that seems to come out with it. And I think it's really interesting because it's not like that almost any other sport. Even surf has said, screw it, we're going all in. You know, give me a Samsung and I'll talk to it. I'll talk on it in the barrel and on the wave or something like that on my cell phone. So
from your point of view, from working with a marketing agency, do you see this as like, well, this is my public, this is my audience, so I need to find a way to speak to them in the terms, like how can I work with the right products that are going to speak to them? Or do you go like, okay, no, we just need to educate people to understand, hey, we need money in the sport and we got to accept this. We got to break these rules. We got to get out of this older mindset.
I'm not one to convince the runner. I think if anything, it's got to be step-by-step or almost breadcrumbed a bit. If that's the direction we want to go, and I'm not even, to be honest, I'm not trying to shape it in one way or the other. My job would be to make sure that the brands are successful, and that are of my clients. So we really look at this very closely of like, how much branding is good? Like, if it's over branded, and Hoka gets very close to it, I'll be honest, like we're right on the line of how much Hoka branding is on that Western States course. That inflatable tube at Forest Hill Aid Station, does that look ridiculous in a forest? Sometimes, yeah, to me, like, do I want 10 of them? No, let's put two. Like, and you might see four next year. So I feel like it's like kind of just moving that way. And at the same time, really seeking feedback and like, is the brand getting a good reputation from this? Or is it hindering the brand too? Because if the trail race participant is not reacting positive to it, then we're not doing our job, and we've got to back that off and find another way to connect with them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right with you. I mean, I'll be honest. I'm one of those, and we'll get. I think we're going to bring up this name in a little bit here, but the Anton, you know, the free spirit on the soul on the trail.
I think I even mentioned Anton in my last podcast. I love the button up shirt. Like, that's my style. I'm a big Anton fan.
Yeah, no, and that's the style. But I mean, usually that type of audience is going to be the first one to cry sold out, to cry, hey, you're going in the wrong direction. Hey, this is too commercial. But at the same time, they're buying shoes. They're buying products. They're not running naked. They are a market. So it's just finding the right voice to speak to them. Sometimes I go like, maybe where's the middle ground that we can find here where we can keep everything flowing, where there's money for everything, but at the same time, I mean, you come from the same generation as me. This term sold out, so-and-so sold out.
This is
Western
great.
States sold out. Right. So how do we protect that soul?
Do you think anyone's ever said that Patagonia has sold out?
Love it.
Okay. I would say no.
I'm sure somebody has said it because
I'm sure someone has. Yeah,
the world is full of haters. But
that's right. That's right. Yvon Chouinard. I doubt there's too many people that say that guy sold out because A, he's kept it private. He's made it a B Corp. He donated, I think, all their money is going to be like donated long term. He's just setting it up for centuries in advance. For me, that is like that's it. That's the pinnacle. How can we make a great product with the idea that it's giving back at the same time and also beloved and making money and supporting an entire company, a family beyond? Is that like for maybe that would be my A goal
benchmark
for trail running? For trail running.
Right.
Yeah, that would be my ellipsis or whatever, that the top of the peak, to be like, how do you make a sport that even tries to resemble that? Where we're doing all those things at once.
I almost want to abandon all of my notes right now and we just go into that think tank, because that is exactly, my God. Like, how do we do that?
Yeah.
Maybe we can circle around to that. I want to, but
yeah.
Like with this, okay. You work with athletes. With this, speaking to the audience, the way Hoka uses athletes to speak to their audience, like what are the different ways that you see major brands working with athletes in different ways, not even right or wrong, but just in different
right.
ways. Like I look at Team Hoka and the way that the message that they send through their athletes, it's different than when I look at Black Diamond or Solomon.
Yep.
Black Diamond.
Yep.
You know, what are the differences that you see, and what are some of the good things that you see that you would like to see more of in the sport?
This is another thing we talked about earlier in a meeting internally, which was, I'm not even going to decipher between how the brands are using their athletes. I'm going to decipher between how brands are using their influencers versus their athletes. So there's almost an equal amount of money now going into non-athletes in general. Multiple characters of the show, The Bachelor, if you're familiar with that show, reality TV stars, models, etc. Right? They're getting like half the budgets right now that they're putting into individuals. And then the other half is going to athletes, I would say. And that's a struggle between the PR teams and the sports marketing teams. So PR is going to push more to influencers. Sports marketing is going to put more to the actual athletes. Now, I just don't want to see it go further away from the athlete and start trending more towards the influencer, who is not as passionate about the actual movement and the excellence in sport, I guess. So I think that's one thing we have to be careful of. So anytime I then see Hoka asking their athletes to put certain product out there or interact with fans in a certain way, I'm like, whatever helps them sell shoes and keeps the athletes engaged and paid, I'm down for it. It's more for me of like looking at it as a step back of the entire budget from the marketing department and not just the sports marketing departments. It's like they're all searching for budget and scratching for budget, and they have to show an ROI. And if whatever they have to do to get their kind of athletes to dominate and to get the word out there about their shoes, I am for it. Little inside baseball in terms of like, or inside football.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
But I want to get into the way you think about athletes, the way they work with brands. Mm-hmm. And the way that they become like you with brands, they become household names. And sometimes the brands get left behind and the athlete becomes
great.
More famous. Sometimes they go mm-hmm. hand in hand, but I want to play a little game with you. Like why they became household names, why, and what they did right, what they did wrong. If you were working directly with them, what would you do differently? So let's start with some, mm-hmm. what seemingly are obvious ones where people are going to be like, well, of course, but there's more subtlety behind it. Let's start with Killian. Like household name, as far as much as you're going to get with trail running, like what does he do? What has he done right over the last 20 years? And what would you do if you were working with him to put things at another level?
I hate this word, and I ask for it to be removed oftentimes in our different decks and stuff like that. But authenticity and Killian go hand in hand. There is no like stronger, burlier, more authentic mountain man than Killian Jornet. Like, you know, he could survive for weeks in the mountains. He can skimo, he can run, he could do anything up there. And so I really believe that he has just lived that life and shown it in different ways. Now, what he did right, Solomon. Solomon made him, I want to say they made him. And there weren't a lot of like videos being done on trail and mountain runners back in 2010. But I forget the name of that YouTube video, but there's that amazing like Solomon behind the athlete thing, whatever it is. But
the Killian's Quest, like the Killian's Quest, series.
Thank you, yeah. The series.
I think it's Killian's Quest. Yeah, like, the series.
But it showed me who he was and highlighted him to a whole nother level. I don't know if I would give him any tips. He just was himself, partnered with the right team. And and I also think shout to the Solomon marketing team who raised him up and showed who he was. They didn't have to pretend.
The director of the video at the time, Bob, I forget his name, Bob. He's now doing Golden Trail, all the Golden Trail stuff. But that series, I think that it created a whole generation of trail runners in my opinion.
Who didn't want to be that guy or that gal, female, like running along these mountaintops.
I've heard the legends of Killian being so involved with the product design at Solomon at a level that no other athlete was at Solomon. And like, that's what one thing I always want to tip the hat to the endless effort that some people put in that doesn't get recognized. I think with Killian, a lot of times we go like, well, he's an amazing athlete. Of course he's a household name. It's like, no, that guy busts his ass off the trails too. He's really smart. And he showed his value to brands way beyond than just being an athlete. And I would love to know how much of an influence, like how many of those ideas were his throughout that series, or how much of it was Solomon directing. I'm not sure.
I don't know, but I love it. And that's
Go ahead.
Last thing I was going to say, Solomon's awesome. We've gotten to work with them a few times. I'm curious if he should have left a little bit earlier or gone while he was still kind of like winning everything and then whatever business he now owns. Blanking on the name of that new company.
And I got to say, it's like the normal is like, it's like a unicorn down here. It's like seeing a leprechaun or something like that in Brazil. It's like they just, and someone had him. I was at a sky running event over the weekend and someone had a pair and like, we all flocked to see the normal shoes.
To check it out.
And I got
to
say, eerily similar to the Sense, the Solomon Sense
that's funny.
That he helped design.
Like, can you just make it like this? Can you bring it to some factory?
Probably tweaked him a little bit more to his liking. Another one, let's go. We're going to Western States again here. Courtney Duhalter. Why is she a household name? Why? And what has she done right? And what would you tweak to bring her to an even, if it's possible to bring her to another level?
The short knees are my favorite. I love her shorts. Like, I love anybody that has a calling card. There's any surfer where who they are in the water because they're wearing that wetsuit or wearing those board shorts. Courtney has brought that to the trails. I mean, like, you could see that from a mile away, like out on a ridge and be like, oh, there's Courtney. So I love a calling card on any athlete, something that's just consistent that they do every single time, you know, red shoes or whatever you're going to do. That's one thing I love about Courtney. I don't know if she's trying to, I don't think you can change Courtney. I don't think that there's anything I could tell Courtney to have her do anything different. I think she was on the Rich Roll podcast and they were talking about nutrition and she's like, I just love gummy bears, Rich. Like, I'm going to eat junk food. So, and he's like, Courtney, you could be so much better. And she's like, I don't really feel like it. I don't want to stress out. I'm going to eat the junk food and then go crush everyone over every distance and every trail run. So how can you tell her to change anything? Who am I to, she lives in the biggest pan cave in the world. It's one. That she inspired me today. This is how these athletes inspire people. You know, just watching interviews and watching her highlights from the weekend, I had a choice to choose a bike ride this morning. And I chose a tougher bike ride in a longer space and went way harder because I was thinking about how tough of a female she was.
Like, just to chip away in the pain cave.
That's it. Like, I was like, oh, don't be a wuss. You know, like, Courtney Duhalter did this for 100 miles. Like, you're on here for an hour. Like,
you were bleeding, stuffing your face with gummy bears and crying.
I do eat like her too. Yeah.
I always love when we just focus on the food. Well, Courtney eats gummy bears, so I'm going to eat gummy bears.
Exactly.
Michael Phelps eats a pizza every day. I read that somewhere. I'm eating a pizza every day.
Exactly. You weren't in the pool for 8 hours.
Now we're
going to
get into more. We're going
to
get more.
I haven't said anything negative yet. I'm trying to.
Yeah, but I'm going to give you lots of opportunities now because we're going to get more into marketing made.
Okay, cool.
Because our first two have been like these on their own pure athletes, but obviously
pure personalities too.
Pure personalities, but the way they show that, that's not always so clear that like it gets to us. It's served to us on a nice platter, but it didn't have
that's
to
true.
Be. It didn't have to be, and they do a good job of telling their own stories. They figured out how to do that. And there's a lot of amazing athletes that never did that, and they never became household names. They became the guy who won Western States 3 times that nobody really remembers.
Tim Tweetmeyer. Sorry, I don't know if you were going to say that. But,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You nailed it. I didn't want to name names, but you nailed it. But let's go. This is in your alley here, Dean Karnazes.
Yeah.
Why is he a household name? What did he do right, and what could we tweak? What did his stupid agent do in 2006 that wasn't right?
As he's referring, I haven't brought up Dean because of the single track podcast I was on last month, which turned into a Dean Karnazes exploratory session. So I probably kept
which
that
one quiet.
Which
I don't want to make it here, but
okay,
for people who don't know, you worked with Dean really early on in
your career.
I did work
with Dean for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm. Why? I just want to hear real quick, like in this list, like why is he a household name, and you know what did he do right that people didn't see? Like what we go, oh yeah, he wrote some books. He was a decent trail runner, but like what did he get that other people weren't getting at that time?
Okay, I think he saw the opportunity that others were keeping to themselves. They were keeping that time on the trail, those events at Badwater, their experiences at Western States. They were keeping it internal, or they were keeping it within the community, the trail run community, which was even smaller than it is now. They were keeping it insular. Dean busted that open to be like, these stories are incredible. Now, Dean could have told stories about other people. No, you know, the only Dean tells stories about himself, which is just, it's very natural for him. So he is very good about controlling his narrative, the training, the racing, the experiences he had, the places he went to, and telling that narrative. So I use narrative a lot with the, I don't know, if we still represent about 4 athletes, and they're just passion projects, people that are coming up on the up. And we use the word narrative all the time. What story are you telling? Because if the brand doesn't understand it in 60 seconds, that you're going to be the first African-American explorer to climb the highest volcanoes in the 7 highest mountains in the world, boom, your mission is set. This is the ride that you're inviting them to get on. There's your narrative. If you don't have that narrative, it's really hard to get people behind it to know what you're trying to do. For Dean, it was to test his limits, run the toughest races in the world, run further than everybody and break Guinness World Records, and get brands on board. The North Face was on. All types of drinks were on, Hammer Nutrition, all these people to jump on early because he had a narrative to tell and a story that people were able to get on board with. I think that better than maybe anybody in the space so far. And at the right time, he was early. Let's not put luck against it. Once you're early, you're not competing with anybody else telling a similar story. It was even before Jurek had a book out and stuff like that. It was the first one out.
Exactly. But let's say with him and for Jurek too, it's like nobody told them. This is where the hard part.
That's true.
Let's put ourselves in his space. He's in a little sport. He likes it and everything. Nobody's telling him, man, you should write some books about this. You should turn this into like your own personal enterprise. It's like, no, he drove that. He drove that himself. He created that narrative.
I did not create that narrative. I just got on for the ride and learned as a 26-year-old attorney at the time, or 28-year-old, whatever it was. I will never take credit for that. But I learned by watching, you know, him do this. There'd be opportunities with Regis and Kelly, like that show that's in New York City. And it was like, he would check in with them from the road, you know, and they would do segments with Dean on these long runs and be like, oh, what's crazy Dean up to now? You know, he was on Letterman. He was on all these things because he put himself out there, took it very professional, had a book agent, had a booking agent. We were his marketing and sports agents.
How much? Just out of curiosity, like things like that, getting gigs like that, where he's, you know, he's on Letterman, they're calling him up on the morning show. How much of that was him kind of like he kept on knocking on their door?
A little bit of both. He had a really good book agent, so he was selling books, and anytime they want that Penguin Press, or I can't remember what publisher we were working with at the time, they also have their own publicists, so they want to sell more books. Like, let's keep this engine hot. And so they're out reaching out in New York City to other opportunities to share the book, put it on the desk, do that thing. It's like this snowball. It's really wild. It's pretty fun to watch, actually.
Yeah, it must have been fascinating. I mean, it still is. He's still going. That's the amazing thing. He's still going, and he still has an enormous voice. All right, the two names I'm going to put on there, but we can skip over there. I had Jurek and Goggins on this list, too. Kind of very two different, kind of created. They did a good job with their narrative.
So good. Well, Jurek was the best at the time, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm
He was.
I think of the best storyteller and the best at marketing himself and putting a really clean package together. When I think of Scott, I'm thinking of at the time unbeatable at a lot of the ultra distances.
Seven times Western States.
So exactly. I mean, really wild things and living the life, like out there on the trails, in the trailer, whatever,
Like, he didn't become a household name until he took the initiative, wrote a book. He drove it home. It's like he was kind of dwindling down on a big career, and then he instead of just stepping off and becoming Tweetmeyer instead of becoming a Tim Tweetmeyer in the archives of history, he's still getting called up by Apple to do promos for the Ultra Watch.
I'd love to know the impetus behind that, because I have to think, like, someone or a team, or did he get married at that time, and was he about to have a kid? Like, I don't know really the timing of it. I think maybe his kids came later.
I want to say he had an injury or something. I want to say that, but maybe I'm confusing him with another athlete. But I want to say he had an injury, had some downtime, and was starting to think, like, I'm going into the next chapter. What's the next thing I'm going
to
do here?
What's your transition to it? And I have to think that's it. He just seems so pure that he was just like, all right, what am I going to do now? I'm going to coach. I'm going to need a book. Look at Dean. Yeah. And honestly, these things often fall like dominoes. Like, okay, what's the successful roadmap here? I was like, well, I'm way better in Carnassus. Like, why don't I have blank? And it's like, oh, he's got a book. So once you have a book, you can kind of build around it or whatever it is. So I have to think it happened naturally.
One name I got to put, just because it's already come up, and it's a name that I think people don't give a lot of credit where it should be given, it is Anton. Tony Kaprishka.
We didn't even finish Goggins.
We didn't get to Goggins. You want to go into Goggins?
I just want to say he's just different. I mean, I do think he's opened up. I love people that open up run to other people, to new worlds. So I want to give Goggins like that. Like, yes, is he ridiculous? Is he bad for the sport sometimes? Yes, because, like, should we really be running on broken feet? Absolutely not. It sometimes ruins running. But I will say, I was on a plane with him one time. I was sitting right behind him. We were coming home from Austin, Texas, and 10 people walking by on the plane shook his hand and said, thank you for your book. Like, you inspired me. And I've been on planes with previous people we talked about and not seen the same reaction. So I've seen it viscerally in terms of the impact he's had on inspiring people to move more. And I will never discredit anybody that's had that impact on others. I don't know at all. I have nothing.
But you were on the plane with him. You watched him do pull-ups, like, in the seat, in the plane seat. He just continued to do pull-ups. When the stewardess offered peanuts, he yelled at her. I'm not eating that shit.
I ate peanuts. Oh, I got 100 more. And we're not taking this plane off till I'm done. I'll push this plane.
Anton, he's in the American legends of trail running. He's one you can't skip over. Because I mean, we talked about this, like, you could almost blame him for this, a lot of the identity of American, not saying that he created it, cause it was there well before him.
Yeah.
But, like, when you see Anton, cause it's like, he hasn't been running at a high level in a long time. And he's still a household name for trail running. I mean, sure. To me, that's just fascinating. Why is that? Like, what happened there? And like, what would you do if you were working with him?
First of all, the reason you love him is the same reason I love him, is he's cool, right? Or he like puts off this like sense of cool. The wardrobe, the style, going big, and that it doesn't mean anything unless you're not very good at running. I know a lot of people that are cool and have great style and are terrible at running, and they're just we don't know their name. We know his because he can combine both, right? It almost had that level of like short knees thing when I was talking about Courtney Shorts, of like there was something you could identify with him, the long hair, the button-up shirts, half-cared, very, very cool. So I think there's something about wanting foam. There's also these people in bridges. And I think about this a lot in, I work in track and field as well sometimes. Like I'll go to the U.S. Track and Field Championships in a couple of weeks. There's these people in, and maybe your age group, my age group, where we can connect to the groups that grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s that were like, it wasn't commercial at all. And then we have these in-between people. I would put it as myself, you, a generation where they can kind of connect to the old and a little bit of the new. And we are this weird like bridge. And Anton's got a bit of that himself because he's taking the style of it, but he came up when trail running was becoming more commercialized. So it's, I mean, he got paid by Adidas, if I'm not mistaken, at least for a little bit, and others.
No, he's still getting paid. I mean, he's still, as far as I know, he's still with La Sportiva.
La Sportiva, yeah.
He was with New Balance back
That's
in the day.
Was.
He
was, thank you.
With New Balance. But I mean, yeah. his
bridge,
value
he's kind of
was
in between,
market.
Right?
Yeah,
straddles generations is what I'm trying to say.
I one thing I always point out though is just like a little bit with Courtney too. They have this happy go lucky attitude. This like I'm more with Anton. This like this free lifestyle and everything. But he, two things. One, he was a blogger early. As much as like we go, oh, those bloggers or whatever. Like he's a really good writer, and he captured this right. essence, this purity of the trails that we're talking about as being a soul sport. He captured that in writing
yes.
at a time when blogs were really big, and he captured the attention of a lot of people with that. Two, he still managed a career. I mean, I don't know him personally, yeah. but like he's managed contracts throughout the years until like I said, he hasn't been performing at a high level, and
right.
he's still seen as like a lifestyle soul athlete that mm-hmm. that brands want to be related to. So it's like he's doing the work there, even though he's seen
yeah.
as like this laid back, go lucky sort of guy. He's doing something there.
I think the one thing we've talked about with each of these individuals, Dean, Courtney, Killian, Goggins, is the storytelling. And I come back to it again. But like whatever your medium is, it could be writing, it could be blogging, it could be the video we talked about with Killian, you know, the behind the scenes piece, everything on Courtney now, people following her everywhere, is that the story is getting out and it's being open that up and let people attach themselves to it, but be inspired by it and all those things. There's a reason why these six names, like each of them either had a story told about them or they told their story themselves. And oh, it's pretty interesting that if there's going to be a constant flow here.
Yeah, no, and I want to link this into like when you guys are looking at athletes, what do you guys, you said creating narrative and you tell that to them, but like before you would, yeah. you're not working with many athletes now, but both, what would you look for in an athlete to see potential? Like, do you look at number of followers? Do you look, or do you only look at what story potential they have? I mean, let's be honest, if they're not on
yeah.
Instagram, not on Twitter, are you going like, hey,
we
can't
hard.
Work with you.
That's going to be, yeah. If you're not serious about telling your story in different, you better have some medium that you're going to be able to connect with fans and share a message, whether that's for other brands or whatever you're up to. You've got to have something. There's no way we can work with you. Cause you're not serious. I sent there's a cyclist. Up and coming. That's almost anybody that I'm working with right now, but they're not developed. So I'm not worried about what you have now. I'm really not. It's if this was how I was making my money, then yes, I would need to know that we don't need to rebuild or to build up your entire persona. But since right now they're passion projects and they're things that I just want to see great people succeed or people with a lot of potential, I, as long as I see the steps forward and that you're serious and you want to take them, I'm sending them a questionnaire and it's talking about what are your goals? What is your story? Where do you see yourself in 5, 10 years? Give me a little vision of where you see yourself and at the top of that mountain. What is the top of the mountain for you? And what do you care about? Like, what are your, do you care only about the money part? Do you care about uplifting these other, you know, communities or people like that? If you can start to answer each of those, not only is it going to keep me fired up, but it's going to keep potential fans fired up, or it's going to keep potential brands fired up, because you're able to answer questions and tell them exactly what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. So we're not going to get into what you have now. I want to know where you're going. It's much more fun for me to like be part of that build than it is to just get you another contract. I don't really care for that. I might as well sell my, our stuff. You know, I've got enough things to sell.
Okay. And you mentioned like passion projects for you and for your company, but let's twist that for like what passion projects do you see athletes taking up that make them more valuable on the market beyond just that become part of their narrative? So let's go ahead and link this to Western states. We just saw what Dakota Jones, what he just did biking to the start line.
So cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that till afterwards. Or did he only say it afterwards?
No, he announced it before. He announced it right when he was taking it. He put it on Instagram. I don't know to what degree. But,
so cool.
This thing of going after your own pastor as an athlete, from the athlete's point of view.
Yep.
And then like what passion projects do you see some athletes have that you go like, wow, that is incredible. And now brands are going to be with you because of that. What are you seeing out there and what would you like to see more of for trail running?
I mean, where I get hit oftentimes is with when my heartstrings get pulled. So what else are you doing for this community that's supporting it beyond your personal wealth? We have an athlete. I'm going to take it out of trail running just for a second, but it applies to all athletes, is that every expedition he goes on, Andrew Alexander King, he's an explorer, a climber, a big wave surfer. He's doing something in that community every single time. So if we're asking for money from Black Diamonds, one of his sponsors, if we're asking for money from backcountry.com, one of his partners, we're also putting a budget aside for what he's going to do when he's on that expedition, whether it's Everest, surfing big waves in Portugal, something like that, where he's giving back on that thing. We're going to capture it and we're going to feed it right back to that brand so they can attach to it. Like, why couldn't we do that? And that also gets back to our Patagonia piece where it's like, good is the new cool. Doing something good is going to, it's going to be able easier to tell the story from a PR perspective, but also for that company. So that we're not just talking about selling running shoes, I think.
Yeah.
So that's something that fires me up. And I think it's a great, I think those are easy ones to do.
Not easy. 2 weeks ago, Fernanda Maciel, probably our most famous Brazilian runner, was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And we were talking, her passion project throughout her career has been White Flow, where she does these different feats throughout the world, setting new, and she always directs them. She organizes them directly with a social impact, whether it's something with hunger, helping people in need, working with a favela in Brazil. She always, she takes a big project. But it's like she has Red Bull behind these now. She has North Face behind these now. But one thing that like that I hadn't thought of, like when the first one she did was just this teeny little self project that she's 100% behind all these. Red Bull's not telling her, hey, let's create this amazing project that has social impact. She's creating it. She does all the work behind it. And the first one she did, it was a budget of €1,000, which is like, to me, it was just like, wow, for a lot of people who, I don't know, maybe let's go into a thought thing with this. If you had like a runner who's like on the precipice of being a household name, but not quite there. Let's take some Western states. Let's take like a Tyler Green, who's like, I don't understand how he's not more well known in the trail running scene.
Right. He's a badass.
He's badass. Yeah. But like, all right, so let's say someone of like that, or even a little bit less, who doesn't have any sponsor. He's got Nike with him, but like they're going, oh shit, how am I going to make a name? Should I spend 10?
I mean, let's Anthony Castellas.
Okay.
Like, does Anthony Castellas have
it? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, sorry.
That's a great one. So it's just like going to these events, going and trying to make a name on a trail scene, it's an enormous deficit financially that they're going to put themselves in. Like, what do you think? Because, like, I look at, like, what Fernanda did, 1,000 euros. Like, that's going to be, like, going out to UTMB, competing, like, spending the week there, competing. You know, that you're going to spend more than 1,000 euros on that. But taking that 1,000 and she invested it into a self-project, did a 10-day trekking, set a record. Like,
amazing.
What do you think if you were talking to, if you had an athlete like that who's kind of like getting there but not quite there, and they're not sure where to invest their time and energy and, more importantly, money at this point for them, like, do you think they'd be better off trying to create a personal project or to try to make a big name?
I think so. I think you can't stand out otherwise. I don't think you're going to be able most people other than us don't know Tyler Green from Anthony Costellas to Cole Watson. They don't know the difference between these three, but how can you tell the difference? I want to dig into each of them individually. If I was to like spend a day on this, I'd be like, all right, let's interview. I want to know a little bit more about you and be like, okay, keep telling me about that. Like, that sounds interesting. Why are you fired up about that? Well, I love to bike. I love to cycle. It's like, okay, why aren't we doing this run, cycle, run thing? I know Cole Watson loves to fly fish. I was like, I could get you into trail running, fly fishing, and making incredible content that nobody else has made. And now you're the fisherman runner guy who's getting into trail peaks and catching fish. You know, we'll get a camera behind you and doing stuff, but I'm just riffing off this thing. But I want to find something unique about each of them and then dig and twist on it, because that's going to show that story, that thing that Dean told, that thing that Killian told, the thing that people want to learn more about you and what makes you different and what makes you tick. And just showing up and winning races is never going to do it.
Love it. I want to shift more into the races and organizing, more the organization of mm-hmm. races. I know something really important for you is you organize a lot of events and you have Run Local. Talk a little bit about what you're trying to do with this organization and what kind of events you're holding.
Sure. These are primarily road events, but I will not stop there. I think we will eventually get into trail. It's where I love to run. I mean, if I'm going to pick a day to go run, I'm not going to go run 10 miles on the road. I live in the Redwoods out here in Santa Cruz, California. So I'm going to find some of the most amazing, soft, you know, tunnels, tree trails, forest bathing all over the Santa Cruz Mountains. But when we come to Run Local, our idea is to impact as many people as possible in the places where we live. Now, my company is based in the San Francisco Bay Area. So we know, if you know the San Francisco Bay Area, our big cities are San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, this very triangulation of, I don't know how many people we got, 5 to 7 million people, something like that. But we have an enormous opportunity to inspire a lot of people to run, whether that's all the way down from kids races that we hold at each of our events up to marathoners in the East Bay and Oakland. So our idea and our mission is to take these like local themes. San Jose is slightly different than Oakland. Oakland's, you know, known as a great hip hop capital of the world, plus a great urban environment. San Francisco, one of the most beautiful places to run in terms of a big city environment. Taking those things and integrating them into the race experience. In San Jose, we have great Latino culture. So we're going to have mariachi and lowriders and like just things that are only San Jose. So it's really taking the people and they feel like people are listening to them. They're like, oh, this is for me. Like, I'm from San Jose. I might from the east side of San Jose, but I can come out here and feel welcome. We can do the same thing in Oakland by partnering with, you know, getting our local race director, partnering with local charities, doing those things, and then just making the event exceptional, depending on that. So we own a number of events. We have one more event down in Santa Barbara. That's like a kind of a coastal town in Central California. And that's very Santa Barbara themed as well. Palm trees, surf vibes, all of those things. So it's very much about how it's themed and the experience of the day that makes it the Run Local experience.
It sounds like you're creating an amazing experience, which is like the way I think that we need to look at events is you're creating an experience, because especially in trail running, especially
memorable.
In trail running, it's just like, I remember I had a phase early on, which is like, well, shit, I can come to the same trail and run this on this mountain any day I want.
Yeah, why would I pay you for it?
Exactly. And then some of the events I was like, shit, I'm forking over a lot of money and it was a lot better when I was here alone last week.
with my friends.
Exactly. Yeah. Or when I came with a group of friends. So if you're not doing something that's unique, that's adding value to the trails. It's like, why are you doing it? But like, so you're creating something very local. How important is like local economy within that? Because you're working with a lot of major brands. Like, how do you find that? Because the important thing is to be accepted locally. You got to show, you got to affect the pockets of the people who live there for them to embrace the event. How do you work with a brand like Hoka to do that?
Yeah. So Hoka's, I mean, we're going to do it two ways. One is we're going to try to show the community. We're working with the mayor's office, the city councils and stuff like that to be like, hey, we're bringing, you know, upwards of $20 million or something across a big major marathon to the city. And that's going to impact hotel rooms, local economy, stores, little catering, restaurants, everything where you're going to be like, we're just driving the economy here. Now, when I go back to Hoka, it's like, do you want access, like an authentic access to this community, whether it's the run community? So we're in touch with run clubs, run crews, the local running stores, and attaching that Oakland Marathon or whatever. In Oakland Marathon's case, it's Under Armour. In Santa Barbara, it's Hoka. It depends on really the partner there. But it's like really tying the brand to something that's real in that community and making sure they don't fly in, fly out. Like, oh, here's some free stuff or here's a shoe trial. Now we're out of here. How are we doing it for like the 6 months leading into the event? So, and then a something afterwards so that you're just like completely tied in a much longer story with those brands. I have, gosh, just word story and narrative just keeps coming up. It must be drilled in my head, but it's real. It's absolutely real. We're telling a Hoka story to our participants for a long period of time.
But like, how do you do that? Like for that 6 months, like give me some examples.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example. So we're going to do that with Under Armour, most likely. The deal's not signed, but I would love for them to come on, and they already have in pass in Oakland. So we have a 6 month plan where we will kick it off in September for a March event. We will have monthly runs with Under Armour from different specialty running stores in the region of that area. So one's like, hey, we're going to get your shoes on the feet of our runners throughout the Bay Area for the people that are training for this event. They'll have the opportunity to learn about Under Armour, try them out, see if it's a legit shoe, if it's for them or not for them. That can go for apparel or shoes. Two is going to be, how do we connect them to like maybe our charitable partner? So Eat, Learn, Play is our charitable partner. That's the charity started by basketball star Stephen Curry. They're all about Oakland. Now he's an Under Armour athlete. Now, how do we connect the idea of supporting these kids at the event with all free entries? So we're going to work with the school district. They're going to provide us with access to promoting it to it. Under Armour, we're going to give you the opportunity to buy each of these kids a free entry to the race. Now, Under Armour's like the hero, the champion in this scenario. We're like, Under Armour came up huge and got a free entry to every single kid at our Oakland Marathon kids race. So Saturday is just about the kids. Now Under Armour's talked to people for 6 months. They've supported kids in the local school district. And then they're out on site that day. They do the shirt for every single participant and maybe an after party or something for VIPs. So it's just like, how many breadcrumbs and things can we put into this entire event cycle where it's not just a one-day event, it's a year-round engagement. And it's not easy, but I challenge the team to do it, and they've come up bigger every single year.
I love it. All right, so this is where I'm going to need some help because you're in the U.S. You've been there for the last few years where I have not been. Like over the last few years, a lot of new races have popped up in Brazil because they're seeing the white space in trail running. One thing I've observed is you get a lot of these guys, they're thinking, we've got this amazing mountain, this amazing space. We deserve an international event. They're already thinking international and they haven't even held their first event yet. They miss out on a lot of the basics. And in my opinion, one of the basics is working with the local community. What do you see in the U.S.? Are you seeing some of that too in the U.S. with trail racing or with the newer races that are popping up? And what are some mistakes that you're seeing that we could tweak to fix in trail running events, in your opinion?
Yeah, I hate to be that broken record, but I think I'm aligned with you right off the bat in that we have a bit of a theory internally of like starting at the core. Like, how can we impact the people right here in this office that I'm in right now? And I've got, you know, about four people around here that we go for lunch runs and their runs. Like, would you do this race? Like, Yes or no? And be like, well, that's not really for me. It's like, okay, then what would be for you? Now we go a little bit further. Let's talk to our local community that's right here. Would they, if you can't get them, if you can't get the people that live right here, that all they have to do is wake up and drive to the local trail or walk or ride their bike, if you're freaking Dakota, to the local trail and
or take a boat. He took a boat. He took a boat to Europe. Did you, know that story? Yeah.
Anyway. I don't know that one. He's becoming my new favorite Anton now, is Dakota.
He's our Patagonia.
He's our mountaintop. There's going to be a statue of Dakota in her office. We're going to, if we can't affect here, then I want that circle to get bigger and bigger and bigger, because I think you have a challenge by going international immediate. For one, you probably haven't figured out the basics. Like, execution is so important in these things. I think there's fly by night, we call them, that's a phrase in English, fly by night, which is like pop up and then they're gone again because they didn't learn how, they tried to run before they could walk to an extent. So I think there's this process that really helps you develop events and learn your chops. I know so much more now, 10 years later, after starting this company, than I knew when I was just first starting. I'm so glad now that I'm dedicating to bigger opportunities. It's kind of like developed with my knowledge. And so I think the same thing has to happen, whether you're in Brazil or any other newish trail running event, endurance event community, to build up slow, not slowly, but at least, you know, to kind of I don't know, to develop at your at a proper rate.
So. I'm with you. Another thing with this too, something I don't know, I'm thinking off the cuff here, is you're seeing races being created almost with a startup mentality of, well, if we can create something, get big enough, UTMB will buy us up.
Acquired by UTMB.
Exactly.
Or like that.
It's a bizarro world that I would not have imagined 10 years ago.
I mean, you're going to have to put some money into it. I think people are going to be able to sniff that out. I, in terms of why are you doing this? Also, and that often comes out in the experience for the runners as well. You're either going to be cutting costs to show that, oh, you're very profitable, or you're going to be investing so much that you're not going to be making money at all because you're just trying to show that you're big. In either way, it's not a lasting endeavor.
But this, it links back to two things you've already mentioned, the word authenticity, creating something commercial, but not coming off as too commercial, not being the inflatable in the middle of the woods. And with this, I want to come to as our closing topic here is like, all right, so we're here in Brazil. One thing I'm always asking people when I have more international guests on the podcast is, all right, so we're a scenario created with, it was a Black Diamond athlete who was on the podcast a few months ago. As I said, all right, imagine we took a time machine, and, you know, do you want to be Marty McFly or do you want to be Doc? We can trade it up. That's not that important. And we go back and we're going to 2008 trail running, in the US. Oh. And there's, let's say Scott Jurek there. And the scene, 2008, that's kind of like what it is in Brazil right now. It's like people are just now discovering trail running. It's just, I mean, it's taking off quick. But the scenario, the level of being mainstream, it's about the same as what is in the US in 2008. So, like, what would you tell Scott Jurek that, you know, only you can save the future, as you have the photo of your disappearing hand and your disappearing soul focus agency? What would you do differently for trail running, and marketing in the United States that Brazil could learn from now? Like, what mistakes can we avoid? What things can we just skip over? We have amazing tools that they didn't have in 2008. We're here on a podcast spreading knowledge. I'd like to think I'm spreading knowledge, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking nonsense into a microphone. What advice can you give us in Brazil as far as what trail we should be following?
Well, there's beauty in now, right? Like, I wouldn't follow exactly what happened between 2008 and 2023 in the US, because you might be able to skip some steps to an extent in terms of how you're sharing it. There's sometimes beautiful things of not wasting some of that time. You're asking You're asking the right question. One thing I love about the development of the U.S. trail running scene is the characters, is the people and the people we've talked about today. But also there's a ton of them, right? There's dozens of Ann Traysons and these legends that won Western States and won Hard Rock a ton. Gone Tim Tollefson, pieces like that, where these characters and these athletes, they seem to bring more to the space. You either want to be like them, or you're like, oh, I want to be something like that. The Dean Karnazeses, the Jurecks, the Goggins even, of like, how many people did they inspire to jump into this trail world? So I have to wonder, like, yourself, Rogers, by you doing this podcast, is going to tap into somebody's instinct of like, I want to do that. That passion that they're feeling, or that positivity or something. So it's almost like, can you continue, and can your Brazilian endurance enthusiasts continue to tell stories and develop these characters, because they're going to be the ones that like seem to build it up. I don't know if we would have the expansive trail running ultra community we'd have without the amazing characters that developed either themselves telling their stories or having other people tell their stories. The brands did a great job too. The Solomons, the BDs, and the Hokas helping tell their story too. So I think it's really important to do the characters. In terms of what I would do differently, I think it really goes with the like DNA of the country. There's something very like, I don't know, the same reason we run local, which is I'm not telling you what it is. All I'm doing is listening. All I'm doing is watching and listening and making it about you, serving it up, the San Jose Run Local event about San Jose. How does Brazil make trail running Brazilian? There's some cowboy in that. There's some music in that. There's some art and beauty and some amazing sports stars that once that you figure that out, it just becomes the place people want to go because they want to experience Brazilian trail running. Not that they want to experience trail running. I can do American trail running here. Why do I want to do whatever we're doing here in Brazil? Why do I want to go to Europe and experience UTMB because of the magic of finishing and seeing, hearing the crowds hitting along the boards in Chamonix. Like I want to feel that pulse. Now I want to go to do it in Rio because I'm going to have a different experience there.
Love that. And it fits into exactly what you're saying is creating the narrative, not creating it, but yeah. Telling it, sharing the narrative and
sharing it, watching. Yeah.
Feeling. One major difference that we have in Brazil is we're not working. I mean, the major moneymaker and where most of the money is in the US and in Europe is with the brands. Yeah. We don't have directly Solomon we have Solomon shoes in Brazil, but we don't Solomon the brand. We're working with like distributors.
The marketing distributors.
Yeah. So we don't have directly Solomon working here. So it's like there's a different. You're working with distributors who don't have the same perspective of the brand, who don't have the same perspective of the sport, and don't see like this. Right. Why would I invest in creating a lot of content, things like that? That's just being missed. There are some up and coming. There's some brands in Brazil that are starting to work a little bit more with trail. What should we as athletes and people who want to see the sport grow and be spread more throughout the country? How should we be talking to brands in Brazil who don't fully understand the potential that like the same way that like we mentioned Solomon early on, 2009 or 2000, there was somebody in a pitch meeting who was just like, oh, let's follow this crazy mountain boy, Killian. And they probably got shot down the first three times they pitched the idea. Right.
They're like, you want us to spend what?
Yeah.
You want what budget for this thing?
I don't care where he's going, man. Like how many
pairs of shoes that is? Yeah. That's what I always say. Like, how many pairs of shoes is this going to cost? Like for me to get this done. Yeah.
Love it. So how can we educate brands almost is what I want. Like, and what kind of pitch should we be bringing to brands?
Yeah. If I can't wow them with data, I'm gonna wow them with not some bullshit, but with some, I don't even know, like with an energy, with mm-hmm. a, like, this is where this is going. I want to show them where the ball is going, not where it's at. So if you want to be a brand that's a part of something in the future, then we're going to be talking about you in 10 years as the foundational brand. as the team that helped made this happen, as the Solomon that brought Killian to the top of the mountain. Now you want to do that? You can get in for cheap right now and become authentic and the trail running brand. Or you can go participate and spend more in football and these other sports and compete with a bunch of people, or you could step outside of it and have an opportunity to talk directly to some very passionate individuals. I think it's the only way to do it, because that's where you truly are right now. We can't make something up that's not true. So you're almost like, this is where we're going. I want you to get on board.
Love it. We've kind of touched on this, but maybe not enough. I mean, like, what I hear a lot now is like, we're talking, oh, trail is growing. It's growing. And like, how are we going to get it to grow more? How are we going to get it to grow more? I want to finish with like, why should it grow? Why should trail grow?
Right.
Why shouldn't it just stay the way it is? Or, you know, why does this sport have to grow?
It's pretty easy for me. I was on the trail yesterday, and I have this like feeling that I get when I'm out on the trail. And it's probably what Anton would write about and would get people fired up. But it's, for me, it's this like blur of trees and of a tunnel of a place where I don't feel that way in any other part of my life, right? There's this thing, not only the feeling that I have after, the endorphins and the things where it makes me a better person, a better dad, a better husband, all those things, but also just the feeling I get when I'm there and in that moment of a rhythm and a place of, that's where I should be in my life right now. Now, if we don't want to share that with the rest of the world, then what are we doing? Like, if I don't want more people to have that experience and to get out there and to know that they belong, and that's where that we were naturally built to be, was running and moving on these trails, then there's nothing else we're sharing. I'm not selling anything. I'm just selling happiness and being a better person and enjoying life more. And that's why more people should enjoy trail running. It has nothing to do with the type of shoe or the brand that is handing you a free something at the end of the race. It's that feeling. And then if that's what we want more people to have.
JT, man. Cheering up here. Cheering up, man. That was no. It's like, if we're talking about like starting with the core and then spreading things beyond that, you just nailed it. And I'm glad that you're one of the cowboys leading the charge in this. Because that was just beautiful, and it seems like you get it, man. You get it. So thanks so much for sharing this. Thanks so much for sharing your knowledge of the cowboy scene in the U.S. and what we can do with it here in Brazil.
Yeah, I love it.
UTMB in Brazil. Are you coming? It's September.
UTMB. If it's a Brazilian party, I'm in. Yeah, I want to surf a little bit too.
That's my question. I mean, the event organizers for UTMB in Brazil, I keep on asking. This has got to be more Brazil than UTMB. It's like
I love it. Yeah, well, Hoka's going there. Maybe I'll get on the budget down there. I want to thank you for having me on. I have so much fun having these conversations. I think you are actually one of those people, you know, probably changing the trail landscape down there. So congrats and keep it rolling,
man. Let's do it. Let's spread the happiness.